Public Media. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Aging can be scary for anyone. In addition to the physical challenges of getting older and potentially losing one's independence, there can also be financial challenges. Have I saved enough for retirement? Can I afford long-term care? For older adults who are LGBTQ, those concerns can be amplified. After decades of creating community among their chosen families, many of those relationships may not be recognized by the state. And marriage equality came much more recently. Older members of the gay and lesbian community are also much less likely to have adult children to help care for them. Then there's the fear of having to go back into the closet at a nursing home or hospital. Surveys suggest more than 60% of LGBTQ adults fear neglect, abuse, or discrimination in long-term care because of their identity. That's according to an October report called Disrupt Disparities, Challenges and Solutions for 50-plus LGBTQ Illinoisans. It's from AARP Illinois and SAGE, a national organization for LGBTQ senior citizens. Earlier this year, soon after the report was released, we discussed it with Mary Anderson, the Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP Illinois, as well as a member of the LGBTQ community who is over 50. Jerry Carden also joined us. He helps coordinate the Aging Up Group, which is a social group for older adults in the Champaign-Urbana area, offered through Uniting Pride of Champaign County. Our third guest was Don Bell, who educates healthcare providers at the University of Illinois Chicago and the University of Chicago about the LGBTQ elder experience. He also shared his experience for the AARP report. Since we're revisiting an earlier conversation, we're not taking calls this hour, but we always love hearing from you. Tweet us at 21st Show to let us know what you think. Okay, I began the conversation by asking Mary Anderson why AARP Illinois and SAGE decided to put together the report.
Well, as you know, AARP, we're the nation's largest nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to empowering people 50 and older. And SAGE is a fantastic partner that's focused on the experiences of LGBTQ older adults. And so we thought it was important to get data forward to decision makers on the experiences of LGBTQ older adults, especially as this population grows here in Illinois and across the country.
So, Mary, there are a lot of barriers this report highlights, but let's maybe start with health and healthcare. How are LGBTQ seniors more likely to experience discrimination when it comes to healthcare throughout their lifetime?
Well, it's interesting because the relationships of LGBTQ adults have not been recognized until relatively recently. That's affected the health outcomes of many older adults. And in particular, as they age, it also affects their ability to access that healthcare. So, for example, here in Illinois, older LGBTQ Illinoisans have identified health insurance and health access to services and care as their top priority in the state. And we also see that in the disparities in those health outcomes. Older LGBTQ adults have higher rates of diabetes, chronic hypertension, et cetera, compared to their non-LGBTQ counterparts. And that is because of a lack of access over decades.
Don, you actually, as I mentioned earlier, help educate healthcare providers at UIC and the UFC about the LGBTQ elder experience. I wonder if you can talk about, have you felt a sense of discrimination or unwelcomeness in healthcare settings in your life?
Well, what happens for LGBT seniors and other age groups is that unless the institution makes a statement about its cultural competency to deal with this community, people are less likely to share their actual experiences with medical or behavioral health providers. It's challenging if one is with a proctologist or if one is with a gynecologist to talk about reproductive health issues and other aging-related issues of medical science if your provider is not one who's open to recognizing and understanding and supporting the experiences of your life. the constant trauma and micro oppressions that LGBT people endure every day are very difficult to deal with in terms of behavioral health if your provider does not have the cultural competency to deal with those issues.
Jerry, I wonder if this is something that you've experienced at different times in your life, or maybe just have heard about it from friends or members of the Aging Up group, this sort of idea of discrimination in healthcare.
Oh, I'm very familiar with the issue, both from a personal perspective as well as in talking with others. Just a little bit of background on myself. I am mostly a volunteer with Uniting Pride at this point. I'm 65 and identify as bisexual, even though I've been in a relationship with another man for 40 years this year, and also in the recovery community. But over time, I think I'm fortunate to live in a community like Champaign-Urbana where there's a lot more openness. I don't know that it would always be that way if I were in a more rural community, but there are enough care providers to ask whether they're comfortable with people who are, you know, LGBTQ. And you can learn just by interacting with that healthcare provider whether or not they're comfortable or not. And usually you can find someone else. I know that Uniting Pride, our program director, has been very good at doing surveys of healthcare providers and not just asking whether people are comfortable working with the queer community, but also having them answer a series of questions. And that totally doesn't get at it either, because maybe they're not honest in terms of how they answer the questions. But we do have a listing of providers that at least have answered questions appropriately. And so that if somebody is looking for a care provider, whether that be physical health or, you know, I'm not sure that they've done the mental health one yet, but I know that that's an intent. And so for the most part, my husband and myself, we've had good luck in terms of finding care providers, but that is not always the case, especially for the trans community, or if you don't fit, a typical mold of, I don't know, I don't want to say that there's a stereotype of your typical, you know, lesbian or gay person or bisexual, but if you're kind of outside of the mainstream in any community, it's a little harder to find someone that's going to be supportive.
Sure. So Don, I want to ask you, we just heard Jerry there talking about talking to a healthcare provider and finding out if they're comfortable. I think I heard from you, though, you might be suggesting people look for healthcare providers that are making sort of affirmative statements. What form does that take? I mean, we're talking, you know, something on the website, a little pride lapel pin on their ID badge. What should people be looking for?
Well, all of those things should be done. Here in the state of Illinois, live in one of the few states where LGBT people enjoy full civil rights by law. But we have to go beyond what is legal to what is cultural. We have to have providers who make affirmative statements welcoming our community to their practice. And it can be done by lapel pins or by stickers or having LGBT publications in that stack of old magazines in the waiting room, that sort of thing. But more importantly, it has to be a normalized practice to ask people about their lives. When we gather demographics, which we do in every medical and behavioral health practice about our patients, we have to be comfortable asking them about their sexual orientation and gender identity demographics. It should be a normal thing to ask how people identify. It should be a normal thing to ask about one's sexual orientation, one's gender identity, because these issues are important in knowing one's patient and providing the services that that patient needs. So it's incumbent upon the professionals to develop the proficiency in doing that.
Let me just take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about some of the challenges faced by older aging members of the LGBTQ community. This is pegged to a new relatively recent report from AARP Illinois and SAGE, which is a national organization for LGBTQ seniors. We're speaking with Don Bell, who educates healthcare providers in Chicago about the LGBTQ elder experience. Jerry Carden, who's with Aging Up, which is part of Uniting Pride in Champaign-Urbana. And Mary Anderson, Director of Advocacy and Outreach at AARP Illinois. I want to turn now, Mary, to some of the financial challenges. That's another aspect of this report. What are some of those challenges? Where do they come from?
Yeah, so it's actually the data was stunning, but not surprising. So we found that 1/3 of LGBTQ older adults live at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. And those poverty rates are even higher for those LGBTQ older adults of color. Now, some of the reasons why for that, it has to do with the decades of discriminatory systems that we've had. So for example, Social Security. So 83% of LGBTQ older adults rely almost entirely on Social Security for their retirement funds. But most LGBTQ older adults do not qualify for Social Security survivor benefits, their partner's retirement or pension benefits, or their partner's assets. And the reason why that is the relationships of older LGBTQ adults were not recognized until relatively recently. So those years and decades of building up retirement was just not possible underneath those economic realities.
And I'm guessing from what you're saying that there's been limited attempts, or I don't know if any attempts, to sort of look at retroactivity of some of those benefits, right? Spousal benefits that maybe people wouldn't have legally been entitled to before marriage equality. Is there anyone looking at that sort of thing?
And actually, that's the next round of research that that SAGE is going to be looking into. It's like, what are the solutions that we can do to make up for those decades of disparities? Is there a way to reach back? Is there a way in order to help folks build up moving forward? So that is the next kind of round of research that SAGE is looking into.
Jerry, you mentioned you've been with your husband for more than 40 years. To the extent you're comfortable sharing, can you talk about how marriage equality affected your life and whether finances were part of that decision?
Well, we've been lucky to be employed and have moderate incomes over the years, so we don't have some of the same concerns that other people do, but we do know that those concerns are out there. And I worked in healthcare providers here in Champaign-Urbana for all of my 37 working years. And I just know that they did not offer partner benefits as early as like the University of Illinois did or many other organizations. I worked for a health insurer. It's probably easy to guess which health insurer it was if you know where I'm at. And they offered health insurance benefits to many of the organizations, the corporations that we insured, but they didn't offer it to their own employees. And it was only the last 2 or 3 years of my working life that I was able to persuade our human resources department to actually offer same-sex domestic partner benefits. And that was actually before marriage equality was legal by the Supreme Court in 2015. And so, you know, that takes a hit on your finances when you're both having to pay for insurance separately. And it was also a case, we were situated financially so that we could both retire early. And I know those years just before I turned 65, and trust me, I was really looking forward to 65 because I was paying $1,000 a month for my health insurance.
Oh, wow.
But there are people out there that don't have insurance, or they don't have access or the money to be able to pay something like that. And so for us, it was okay. But and prior to the marriage equality, we had to file two different sets of income taxes. Mm. We had to have all of these legal documents that other couples typically don't have to have in terms of protecting each other. Should we pass away? Should we pass? I mean, when we pass away, I guess that's kind of an inevitable thing. So there's a lot of things that you have to do separately.
Okay, we need to take a break. We are speaking with Jerry Carden, who helps coordinate the Aging Up group, social group for older adults in the Champaign-Urbana area, offered through Uniting Pride of Champaign County. Also, Mary Anderson, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP Illinois and a member of the LGBTQ community, who is over 50. And Don Bell, who educates healthcare providers at the U of I Chicago and University of Chicago about the LGBTQ elder experience. We're talking about a report that came out specifically talking about the needs of elder aging members of the LGBTQ community. Because we taped this conversation earlier this year and are revisiting it today, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought of our conversations here on the 21st. Send an email to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. And today we are revisiting a conversation we had in October about a then new report on aging from AARP Illinois and SAGE. It's called Disrupting Disparities, and it focuses on some of the ways that older members of the LGBTQ community face discrimination when it comes to things like long-term care, housing, and financial resources as they retire. To talk about it, we were joined by Jerry Carden, who helps coordinate the Aging Up group through Uniting Pride of Champaign County, Mary Anderson, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP Illinois, and Don Bell, who educates healthcare providers at the University of Illinois Chicago and the University of Chicago, specifically about the LGBTQ elder experience. We resumed our conversation, and I began by asking Don about how the idea of chosen families and other support networks often relied upon by LGBTQ people can affect them financially, since marriage equality is only something that's been established recently here in Illinois.
Well, yeah, I can say this. Not only are support systems not recognized, but also undue responsibility upon the LGBT community is not recognized. The LGBT life experience is intersectional. So very few of us are just LGBT only. We are women and we endure the challenges of structural patriarchy. We are African Americans and other people of color. And we endure all of the financial discrimination that happened in those communities. I, as a Black gay man, have not enjoyed the intergenerational wealth that normally should have come to my family. My father, who served in two wars, did not have FHA or VA support in purchasing our family home. And he and my mother finally got a loan and they paid a 30-year mortgage off in 15 years, hoping that there would be something to pass on to my brother and me. But when it came time that catastrophic illness occurred in the family, the responsibility came to me as the LGBT person because I was seen as single and available and able to contribute to that financial situation. When a first cousin was mentally and emotionally unable to care for her children, I ended up adopting those two children and raising my sons as a single custodial parent because I was the one in the immediate family who was unmarried and unobligated. So I had the resources to meet that need. And that happens to us all the time. That in addition to the fact that as LGBT people, you know, we are refused support from the financial communities, denied bank loans, denied investment and participation in the general community at large. So these are our challenges.
Mary, and thank you for sharing that, Dawn. That sounds very, it's all very interesting. Mary, I want to ask you about, we're talking about financial challenges, and one aspect of that that ties back to the healthcare discussion we were talking about earlier is long-term care, right? I understand in some cases LGBTQ seniors may feel forced to go back into the closet. Can you talk about that?
Yes, Ashley, this is one of the things I've been coming out of the study is that we were getting anecdotal reports from service providers across the state about having a very difficult time finding services, and particularly long-term care services for LGBTQ older adults. And that comes down to cultural competency. A lot of it's cultural competency. As Don was saying earlier, we have strong laws in the state of Illinois to protect the rights of LGBTQ adults. But there's a difference between having the law on the books and having the law enforced and changing culture. We heard from one of our profilers talked about how we can change policies, but we also need to change hearts. So for example, our director of the Illinois Department on Aging, she has voluntarily provided cultural competency training that's SAGE certified for all the different service providers that receive funding from the Department of Aging. We would like to make that cultural competency training permanent, and we'd like to expand it to also take it into long-term care facilities. The AARP Foundation, which is part of AARP, was actually part of a Seventh Circuit case here in the state of Illinois in federal court that actually protected an older lesbian woman who was being discriminated against by a long-term care facility. So we need to change the implementation of policies at the local level and create inclusive, affirmative long-term care facilities as well as supportive services for LGBTQ older adults.
Don, there's an apartment building in Chicago specifically for LGBTQ seniors. Before we talk about what that building is today, can you talk about the history of that building?
Okay, yes, I know the building that you're referring to very well since I live here. And it's called the Town Hall Apartments, and it's the fourth development in the nation and the first one in Chicago that is designed to be LGBT friendly. The important significance of it historically is that part of the building is a reclaimed police station where once upon a time LGBT people were taken from bar raids and incarcerated. And so it was a symbol of gay oppression. And today there's a poetic justification or a very different kind of legacy that the building has now as a center for LGBT residents. So, but before I finish, let me quickly throw this in. LGBT friendly does not mean LGBT exclusively. We in this building have a critical mass of straight residents. Why? Because that's an homage to the movement for open housing that began 50 years ago, as a matter of fact, in Champaign-Urbana, when we passed human rights ordinances in both cities and county that prevented discrimination based on sexual orientation and later gender identity. And in respect to the civil rights efforts that we as a community have made, we observe those in this building.
Jerry, well, we just heard there about Champaign County and Champaign-Urbana, I should say. I wonder, can you talk, are there members of Aging Up or Uniting Pride who maybe are not in the Twin Cities? They're more in the rural areas. Is social isolation, especially, I mean, we just heard about this apartment building in Chicago. It's the fourth in the nation. It's the only one in Chicago. I mean, are people who are in more, smaller towns, smaller cities, outside of larger cities anyway, more prone to social isolation in your experience?
Oh, I think that's definitely the case. You know, we're fortunate living here in Champaign-Urbana because we're kind of a microcosm that's very different from other places in the state. And it's just very difficult, I think, sometimes for people that are in those smaller communities. Now, here in Champaign-Urbana, I do know that the at least two of the long-term care facilities, or shall I say senior housing, and some of them have continuing care where they actually go into more assisted living and then like a nursing home type environment. The one that I can think of is Clark Lindsay Village. I do know a gay resident there and he's had no issues, but it's also a very educated population that lives there and people that were rather well off. So I think he's been accepted quite well. And the Windsor of Savoy, I've known some people that have been there that I think it just depends on your personality and how well you fit into the mainstream. Because there was a trans person that lived there for a while and it wasn't quite as easy for them. In terms of the aging up group, it's actually very, very small. It's more or less a support group for people to join. And we actually started kind of during the pandemic. We meet on Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. So if anybody is listening, in order to participate, you just send an email to Uniting Pride and say that you're interested, and then they'll give you the information and collect a little bit of statistical, just demographic information from you, because they are they're funded by a grant. And so they have to be able to provide information about the numbers of people that are being served. Mm-hmm. But so far, most of our participants are actually in the Champaign-Urbana proper area.
Okay. Let me just take a moment to reintroduce my guests. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with LGBTQ Illinoisans over age 50 about a new report from AARP Illinois and SAGE. It's called Disrupting Disparities. It's about some of the financial, healthcare, and other challenges faced by aging members of the LGBTQ community. We're speaking with Jerry Carden, who, as we've just heard, helps coordinate the Aging Up group, a social group for older adults in the Champaign-Urbana area offered through Uniting Pride of Champaign County, Mary Anderson, Director of Advocacy and Outreach at AARP Illinois, and Don Bell, who educates healthcare providers in Chicago about the LGBTQ elder experience and is featured in that AARP report. Mary, just maybe 5 minutes left in our conversation. I want to ask, it seems that according to Gallup polls, each generation is becoming more diverse when it comes to sexual orientation, or at least people feel more comfortable talking about it in surveys. For example, there's an unprecedented 15% of members of Generation Z who identify as LGBTQ. And now we have the highest number of adults overall identifying as LGBTQ at more than 5%. Do you think that we're going to, how do you think these conversations are going to continue to evolve about discrimination as future generations age?
Well, I am inherently a positive person, so I do think we are definitely moving in the right direction. I mean, I must admit, 20 years ago, my wife and I would never have thought that we've been able to create basically a legal family, much less a real family, or what we see as a real family. And so we've seen huge changes happen in a very short period of time, needed changes, but huge changes. And we are at a moment in time here in the state of Illinois where I think we have a real opportunity to make these changes even more. We have a supportive director of the Illinois Department on Aging. We have a supportive state legislature and governor. And so I think we can make huge strides to really create a comprehensive LGBTQ older adult strategy here in Illinois that promotes equal access to services, and also importantly, which we haven't really talked about yet, is data collection. So we can actually continue to look at the story and see where we need to make improvements. Every single time data is collected demographically in the state of Illinois, we should be collecting data on LGBTQ. Because if we do not have that data, we can't do studies like this to bring the issues forward and to provide the evidence that we need for change. So we have a real opportunity right now in Illinois.
Don, I want to ask you, is there interaction between the younger generation and older generation in the LGBTQ community? I can imagine Older members of that community may feel they pave the way for younger people to be more open, be a part of society. But is there a disconnect when it comes to caring for that older generation?
Well, in the human experience, there are disconnects between generations that happen normally everywhere. Certainly those of us who are parents of adult children can attest to that. But within the LGBT community, yes, there are disconnects, and but we're working consciously against them. I happen to be a participant in an intergenerational dialogue project that's been going on for 3 years now, sponsored by our senior center and the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And what happens is the relationships between the generations that develop through that kind of thing are absolutely magical. And it reinforces the idea, the value of the LGBT community, of valuing families and communities of choice when we've oftentimes been estranged from our families and communities of origin.
Don, just a minute, maybe a minute and a half left in our conversation. What are the big policy changes, if you could maybe just pick one or two to focus on, that you would like to see coming out of this, you know, what some of the disparities we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes?
Well, again, I want to emphasize that the changes that are needed in the state of Illinois are more cultural and more normalization in practices than in legality. You know, the laws are already there. But what we have to have people do is to change the way they think about each other. And just as we are challenged across lines of race and ethnicity and gender and class, we are challenged across lines of sexual orientation and gender identity in becoming a whole human society that values all of its people.
That was our conversation with Don Bell, Jerry Carden, and Mary Anderson about the elder experience for members of the LGBTQ community. Don Bell educates healthcare providers at the University of Chicago and the University of Illinois Chicago about the LGBTQ elder experience. Jerry Carden helps coordinate the Aging Up Group with Uniting Pride of Champaign County. And Mary Anderson is Director of Advocacy and Outreach for AARP Illinois. We spoke with them back in October. Coming up after the break, we'll be listening back to a conversation about the history and traditions of Kwanzaa. Because this conversation is taped, we're not taking calls today, but you can always let us know what you thought about what we talked about. Send an email to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. I am at Brian Mackey. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.